Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs in the Senate will come to order. Madam Vice Chair.
Yes, I wanted to, no, I've got to find the one. You came, can we just wait a minute?
Well, while you're digging, I'll go over the agenda.
Yes, please do.
You can find your place marker there, Madam Vice Chair. Colleagues, if you've looked at today's agenda, we're going to have a presentation on the joys of living assistance dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Which we'll go through. The Oregon military is going to do a very short update, primarily focused on budget issues, sequestration, and what the future looks like, so everybody keeps in mind as we go towards the next session of what we can anticipate from our brethren in the federal system. I think all of you know it's campaign season and what we can't anticipate from them. And then we'll have a quick 911 update, and then any bills that members want to put forth on the committee bill to have drafted. Of course, no committee bill member is obligated to any bill. It's just a matter of getting the drafting put forward. That we need to look at drafts in September, because that first magical deadline, I think, is Monday. I'm looking for the president here. I'm sure he knows it is Monday.
It is
Monday like that. And with that, Madam Vice Chair, are you ready?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I always like to start our committee with just little writings or poems or sayings from our Oregon National Guardsmen. And this one, because we're in election season and it's important for everyone to vote, I like this one, and this is by one of our men or women. I don't know who wrote it, but it says, "Just watching the Iraqi people from afar, how jubilant they were at voting compared to the average American over here. The average American is like, I don't even want to vote. When they went and voted, they were excited that they had a purple finger. Here, we take that for granted. We don't understand how much we take that for granted." Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. And we appreciate you doing that, and we appreciate all the veterans in the room, and our thanks to all veterans and serving soldiers that are out in theater and serving the nation right now. The first item that we have is Joys of Living Assistance Dogs. I'm going to let Lori come up and kind of introduce. Joy St. Peter was going to be here, was the founder and executive director, and I understand that she's not here for a very good reason. At least the reason I like being an Army Special Forces, former Army Special Forces officer.
Is he all set?
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Lori Satenspiel here pinch hitting for Joy St. Peter, the executive director and founder of the Joys of Living Assistance Dogs. When I'm not doing my daytime job, I am a volunteer for the Joys of Living Assistance Dogs, and blessed to be able to come into this organization. My daughter wanted to look for something to do community-wide, so she opened up the paper, and there was an ad in the paper for puppy raisers. So she and I undertook, beginning like 7 years ago, raising dogs. And this organization has grown. It's all volunteer. So as you can see in the room, we've got several volunteers with us today. Yesterday in the House veterans, we had more younger dogs, and they were very wiggly, and we were at the end of the agenda. So today we're in much better shape to not get sidetracked.
That's because all the older dogs are sitting up here.
Okay, I'll move on with that. The mission of the Joys of Living Assistance Dogs provides skilled and devoted assistance dogs support and serve people living with disabilities. It's our hope that with the service dog trained specifically to meet the special needs of each recipient, the clients are able to experience life on an individual, more individualized basis. Dogs are begin as they hit the ground. Joy starts to look at dogs to figure out the qualities, how they interact with their puppy or their puppy mates. We have puppy petters that come in and start out figuring out what dog is going to have the right temperament. It takes 18 to 24 months to put a dog into service. Costs about $15,000. It's a lot of man hours, times, vet bills, all of the various things that go into this. And for those veterans that we get dogs to, that's an expense that we try to burden for them to give them a dog. Recently, they started the Help for Heroes program, veterans training dogs for veterans with disabilities. And with help and support of the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of the America, it's been very beneficial. And I want to just give us a little, I couldn't do this any better than Coin Local 6, who did a feature on them, and I just want to take a second and show it. Oh. Sorry.
You're as good at technology as I am.
That's okay. Did you just start? There you go. Oh, sorry. And I messed it up. It's good. Here we go.
Yeah, I see the line moving. It's actually working.
New at 5:30, a local veteran coping with post-traumatic stress disorder says a six-month-old Golden Retriever is changing his life.
Of course he is. This is a great program called Help for Heroes, and he's training the puppy to become an assistance dog. Coin Local 6 reporter Amy Frazier is here now. And Amy, he and this dog are developing a pretty special relationship, aren't they?
They really are. He says the Golden Retriever helps give him the courage he needs sometimes just to leave his apartment. The puppy also helps him interact with others, for example, at the dog park, where people can help give JJ the dog some love.
All right, here's JJ.
He'll tell you JJ is a love sponge, and it's easy to see why.
JJ.
That's the ladies.
Yeah.
Air Force veteran Robert Ellistad of Wilsonville says this Golden Retriever has changed his life as he copes with post-traumatic stress disorder.
He saved my life.
Three deployments to the Middle East have taken a toll on Robert, with long periods of time on alert, always looking over his shoulder.
When you're out in the flight line at night, you have all the spotlights on you. And in that time, you know that you are pretty vulnerable and you're a very good target because of planes and being seen so very easily.
Back at home, he sometimes has a hard time leaving his apartment. Large crowds or noises can trigger a sense of panic. He says the VA referred him to a nonprofit called the Joys of Living Assistance Dogs. Through their Help for Heroes program, returning vets help train puppies to become assistance dogs for disabled veterans. Executive Director Joy St. Peter says it takes 2 years to put the dogs into service. With a face like this, many ask how she can part with the dogs.
Well, when you see, witness some of these breakthroughs, how could you not? How could you not help someone that's given so much to us?
Switch.
In addition to learning to perform tasks like turning off a light switch, JJ is also learning to sense when Robert is about to have a panic attack, pressing his head against Robert's leg.
And that will either help me to know I need to get out of the situation or out of the building and get to a place where I feel comfortable or practice breathing.
JJ is with Robert wherever he goes.
Kind of like in the Air Force, you always have buddies with you to watch your back. And I kind of feel like he's got my back.
He's working closely with JJ each and every day, hoping one day JJ will graduate from the program and become his assistance dog. Now, if you'd like to get involved with this Help for Heroes program.
Okay.
Right, ma'am.
Is that JJ?
That's JJ and Robert.
And you're Robert?
Program.
Okay.
Recognize the dog.
That's what I thought. Yes.
Organization currently has a 3 to 4 year waiting list. And it's why we have a bottleneck of puppy raisers. If each one of you were a puppy raiser, we could put out double the amount of dogs. So finding volunteers to put all that time and effort into taking dogs, socializing, dealing with all those puppy issues. That's our bottleneck. One of the other things that Joy talked about yesterday was the federal VA has stopped funding or help with post-traumatic stress disorder dogs. And that's what you've got before you is some potential draft legislation or joint resolution to urge Congress to do something different, that this is a need. And what she also proposed was trying to do a pilot to take five disabled veterans and create a pilot to show that this dog helps them create a more normal life, as normal as can be expected. And the fund, it's $15,000 per, and we're talking $75,000 pilot. And we'd really like your support on that.
I have a question on the federal VA. Is it a VADC ban? They reverse themselves, or is it a regional Federal Veterans Administration ban? Or because they were funding some programs to start with, correct?
Correct.
And is it VA wide? Is it our region?
I believe it's VA wide, but I can't answer that specifically. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if we could get some feedback from there and then look at the VA-wide and see what they're doing. Because I know even under the continuing resolution, they're expanding funding at the Veterans Administration, which we wish that would continue, but it probably will not. So questions, comments, additional information?
I just wanted to point out that looked like my Natural Resources Committee meeting today.
The committee members.
Well, we've gone to the dogs, yes, we have. So needless to say.
What I'd like to do is pass it on to retired Major Renzel to briefly talk just short about her story and how her dog works with her, how it's changed her life.
Good morning, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My dog's name is Diego. He is my life partner.
Yep, for the record, could you state your name, please? Formalities of being in the military.
I know. Medina Branzell, Major retired.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome. My dog's name is Diego. I am the first veteran to have been awarded and graciously this animal to assist me in my life. We graduated last year. This year, I think there's two more veterans, possibly three, that will be receiving these dogs, and they are donated to us. I have several injuries, 100% service-connected, severely hearing impaired, which is why you see the little device there, some back and hip injuries, and I also am a victim of MST, military sexual trauma, which has grown into PTSD. I'm currently in treatment, making good progress. Diego will, because of my injuries, will assist picking up shoes, putting on socks on days I can't bend over. He supports me in balance when I walk because my legs sometimes just give out. He will also help me remove socks and shoes, but because he's a gentleman, he needs to get my permission. And actually, that's about so much I can't even list. He's certified as for mobility, hearing, PTSD. I can't be more grateful. Thank you.
And we appreciate your service to the nation.
Thank you very much.
Lori, anything else?
I think we've wrapped it up.
Are we going to get to see
your
dog?
Yes, on the other side, we had your volunteers get to introduce themselves and the dog.
That'd be great.
That would be great if they'd like to. I don't think we have to have it on the record, but if each of them could introduce their dogs and themselves.
My name is Laura Johansson, and this is Eli.
Eli, okay. So we recognize this movie star right here.
Yep.
And this is JJ, and I'm a former Master Sergeant Robert Ellison.
Thank you. Thank you for your service.
My name is Lee Gunter. This is Ida.
Ida.
I also have her sister, Inga, at home.
My name is Pat Johnson, and this is Jedi. He's a 10-month-old poodle. Hopefully, we'll go with somebody with PTSD.
And I'm Teresa Green, and this is Jasper.
Jasper.
Mm-hmm. Say hi, Jasper.
Diego is, I believe, the only graduate in this group. Yesterday was kind of comical with all the puppies, and it was difficult for the panel to focus. They kept chuckling and giggling. Best part of these animals is they sell themselves, they bring smiles to people's faces, and they provide an extremely good opportunity to educate the public. We do a lot of Chamber of Commerce work and talk to businesses with ADA requirements. He's been quite helpful in supporting this organization.
Get your bill. Thank you very much, family. Thank you all for coming, appreciate the work you're doing on behalf of veterans.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I think we ought to move this bill forward as a committee bill.
It's already in the House?
Only because they had their hearing first. They've committed to at least one.
Let's do it twice then. Make sure it goes.
Okay. We're going to move on to the Oregon Military Department update. I believe General Caldwell is going to come up, and then he's going to either part of his 14 slides or unpart of his 14 slides, then move into the Office of Emergency Management, and then we'll hear in regards to 911 update from our own senator.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department and also the Task Force Chairman of the Japan Tsunami Marine Debris Task Force. In conversations with your expert staff, your request for an update, we thought we'd make a quick run through what's been going on since the last time we had the opportunity to be in front of you. And you will notice that before you, and I think a handout you should have in front of you, is a picture of the Colonel James W. Nesmith Readiness Center in Dallas, Oregon, as you may recall. And of course, Mr. Chairman, I know you're acutely aware of what happened to the old armory. It was our oldest armory in the city of Dallas. It was built in 1911, I think, 1909, something to that effect. And it the west wall started to go further west, and the north wall decided to go further north, so we had to abandon the building and demolish it. And it's now for sale. If you want to buy a lot in downtown Dallas, Oregon, it's a good buy. We'll make you a deal. But we had to demolish the armory. We got an emergency appropriation, basically. Very unusual that this happens, but thanks to our congressional delegation, they worked hard and got us the appropriation to build this new building. It is a gorgeous building. We got the keys to it last Friday. It's finished. We're starting to move the unit back into the building. It's been out for almost 2 years now, or a little over 2 years. And they're getting their stuff put in and all their gear, and then we're going to have a grand opening on it coming up. And I forget, what's the date?
The
12th of October, and you should have the invitation before you. So we'd like everybody to be there if you could be. The second slide we have is a artist rendition of the the Dalles Readiness Center, which is under construction right now on the Columbia Gorge Community College campus. Again, it's, we believe, an award-winning design. We're hopeful that we can put this out across the country as an example of how to build a nice facility on a public university or public community college with the views that we have are stunning up there on top of the hill. So I think it should be done in about a year. And I think you'll enjoy that a lot, too. The other thing that's significant about this building is we're trying to get to net zero on this building, working with the college and some of the other alternative energies, both solar and wind, and some of the technologies that have been more mature. We're going to try to do that on this facility. As far as deployments go, 2,000 members of the 41st Brigade are scheduled to deploy in July of 2014. We were notified of that about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. We're not certain it's moved to the right a couple times already. It was originally scheduled for the fourth quarter of 13, and then it's been moved to 14. We're not exactly sure, given the, you know, the result of what's going to happen in Afghanistan, whether or not that they will go or not, but we're preparing them just the same. There's 180 members of the 1186 MP company. They return this month here in about 2 weeks. We're going to have a demobe ceremony for them in October. We haven't got the date completely locked down yet. That's been a real successful deployment in Afghanistan, and they have not incurred any fatalities at this point. We're knocking on wood to see if we can't get them out of there before anything else happens there. So, again, it's been a successful deployment. They've done a great job and gotten lots of accolades, and we're, the commander of that organization is also a Portland Police Bureau police officer, and Major Gillentine, and he's done an outstanding job. But we'll invite you to that ceremony when they come back. That unit is based here in Salem, and the other part of it's based in Milton Freewater. So we got a split unit. Next slide shows you a little bit of a year since the 3rd of the 116th. It's a cavalry organization. It's between starts on I-84 in the Dalles, ends in Ontario, and pretty much everything in between, Hermiston, Pendleton, LeGrand, Baker City, are the units that can comprise that organization. And they also have a unit down in Central Oregon. So this organization came back as typical when our soldiers, as we've been noticing over the last several years, roughly a third of them are unemployed, declare themselves unemployed when they return. We worked hard with this unit, probably more so than any other unit, because the command was very aggressive in theater. We actually started talking about employment and issues and getting all the information we could on every soldier who indicated they would not have a job when they got back. We actually did some interviews working with the community and the employer support of the Guard and Reserve. We did some interviews on Skype, and there were several Skype interviews. Boise Cascade was the primary personnel folks that did that. Out of the half a dozen or so that they did, a couple of them actually got hired over that process. Since we came back, and between that time, the community was, all the communities that these units come from were very aggressive in working with us, with our, again, volunteers, employer support of the Guard and Reserve. And we were fortunate because we ended up, Senator Wyden was instrumental in getting some additional funds for us for reintegration. We used those funds with a rather new process that we hadn't tried before. We'd thought about it and talked about it, but we'd never done it. And we hired, with that money, we hired individuals in each one of those units' armories, and their sole task was to work this list of unemployed soldiers and working with the Department of Employment Department and also the local offices. And I'm pleased to tell you that right now this the current level is 93% employed, and the as of March, well, actually, this is a little dated. Last number I got, it says 19 here. The last number I had was 12 are unemployed out of that whole group a year later. And they've all been employed from about 176 people. So we employed all but 12 of them as of last month. I would argue that those 12 don't want to be employed. They would rather hunt and fish and do the things that people like to do there. So the significance of this, it was a resource issue, obviously. We were able to get the one-year federal money. Unfortunately, we didn't look like we're going to be able to keep this going after October this year, but we don't know yet because I don't think any of us know what's going on in Congress, including them. So the bottom line is that we've done the factors on this. If they would have all been on unemployment for that year, this would save millions of dollars in unemployment costs, millions. So a little bit of money up front. You know, hiring these folks and putting them in there with a single purpose, the only job they had to do in the Armory, in fact, is we told them if we caught them cleaning a weapon, helping out the other unit with their other activities, these are their unit members, but we would terminate them on the spot. You only have one thing to do in life, and you have to do it well. And I think it's paid us great dividends. And now they're working with some other issues. They've expanded out where we're trying to identify resilience issues where perhaps people are struggling and we can move them into the VA or get them the help that they need. And I think it's been a real, real good program.
I would just comment for the committee members. I mean, compared to the 600 to 900 we had with the 41st Brigade on the last go-round, that's a phenomenal number. To get that many people back to work, and not only does it benefit them, but it benefits the state itself that these people are back to work and working.
I mean, totally agree, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent job on that.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's we've learned a lot through this process. We've tried and tried trial and error. This one is actually one that we thought might work, and it really did. It really took off now. Colonel Dave Foray, retired, is now our head of their J-9, our reintegration group, and he's doing a wonderful job, and I think that being able to focus that effort in that single area has just been very successful. The average unemployment rate for veterans is around 12-13%. The average unemployment rate in Eastern Oregon is running around 9%. And yet we're down to 12 people. So I think that says if you focus in the business community, and it has been extremely friendly to work with and work with us to try to find those positions. So it's been a team effort, local communities. In the Air Guard, the F-15 training mission may be expanded. It's pre-decisional. It's not been released yet by the Air Force. But as you know, Klamath Falls is the only F-15 training base in the country for both active duty and the Air National Guard. So we have the only mission in the whole entire Air Force to do that. They're talking about expanding that. They're going to add 14 F-15 jets, trainer jets, and 120 full-time jobs, which would be an expansion of the full-time employment. I think we're third largest employer in Klamath County now, and this may put us up to second. But it's not been released. We suspect it'll be released once we get a continuing resolution. When we get lucky and the NDAA will pass, but I doubt it. The Office of Emergency Management with me today in the back of the room, please stand up, Marty, is Martin Plotner, who's the new director as of a week ago, a couple weeks ago, I guess, of the Office of Emergency Management. I relinquished that hat after 2 years. Our former deputy over there, who actually we'd placed in as the director, prior to him having to depart for family issues, Dave Stuckey retired. He had some family issues he had to deal with, which was a loss. But Marty comes from next door, actually. He ran our Joint Operations Center for the last 4 or 5 years. Got a long-time experience working in law enforcement, drug interdiction, those sort of missions, and so he's highly qualified and ready to roll. As I mentioned, I'm also chairman of the task force on the Japanese tsunami marine debris, and we have submitted an e-board request yesterday that we actually submitted it as a group of all the state agencies that are expending funds looking for the future. What we didn't know until last Friday, and also we went out to all counties on the coast except for Curry and Clatsop, and we'll get them at the end of the month, and we're doing a roadshow to tell folks what to look for, what's going on, what's your state doing, you know, what kind of effort is going out there, and what you can expect out of us, and we need your comments. Friday last week, we get notified through the Japanese consulate in the Portland office that the government of Japan has offered $6 million to Canada and the West Coast, Alaska, and Hawaii. We're not sure how that is all going to be played out. We right now, indications are that we will receive $1 million. The state of Oregon will. As we made our request yesterday, we explained all of the expenses that have gone on up to this point, which is roughly around $350,000. And we also explained what we think could be coming down the road with respect to debris this winter and needed a little cushion. Most of this has been borne by the Oregon Parks and Recreation Division. But with that, with the newfound money, if you will, once we figure out the bureaucracy and how to get it to the state of Oregon, the committee or the legislative fiscal office recommended that they not take action on this till December. We agree with that. Again, when we wrote the letter, we weren't sure what was coming down the pike. But now that we have this piece, then we agreed with that decision to delay any further requests. And we'll see how this works out and whether or not they may do it on a number of miles of coastline. We're not sure. We do know that from the indicators for the people who know the ocean, NOAA, mariners, that the currents are going to shift. They're going to come more direct with the winter storms, and there could be a good number of a lot of debris coming on our coast, but we don't know that for certain. Their first modeling said we wouldn't see anything until early in 2013 before we'd see any debris on our coast, and of course they missed by about 9 months, and we ended up with a dock at Agate Beach. The good news was when it landed at Agate Beach, it was very accessible. The bad news is there's two more of them out there, and nobody knows where they are. So we'll hopefully not see them, but we need to be prepared to do that. This task force is comprised the Senate's member on that is Senator Johnson. And there have been very lively discussions, and some good ideas have come out of it. And I think the coordination has been extremely good through all the agencies, both federal and state and local. We had a few hiccups, but most generally it's worked out well. The may have heard about the ghost doc that was on the Tillamook News here about a month or so ago. The bad news is it was a hoax. The good news is that we responded when we heard about it, of course, all the different assorted groups, Coast Guard, everybody else, they burned up a lot of gas looking for it. But the communication link, really what we'd set up and never tested, obviously, because we hadn't had the opportunity yet, we ended up testing it with a no-notice drill that none of us expected, and it worked very well. We had great communication between all of our partners, and so it did serve a purpose, even though it was a hoax. In the Office of Emergency Management, we've submitted 6 legislative concepts for consideration during the next session, 3 of which are directly related to 911. As we testified here before, we need to extend this, or the sunset's coming up on the 75-cent emergency communications excise tax. It'll be coming up in 2014, so that needs to be dealt with, and we've submitted a legislative concept to do that. And we have not put it in the request. We're just basically taking the same language at this point and moving it forward, but we did a little analysis, and if we did have inflation built into this, that 75 cents when it was put in, it would be about $1.13 a month instead of 75 cents. I think that's something that this committee needs to consider and debate and discuss during the session. And also, there is movement, I know, in the Representative Berger has committed that she is going to put another bill up that deals with the prepaid devices. We haven't seen that. We've had very limited conversations about it. But that could also be dealt with in this legislation. And also, we debated but did not put in a separate LC for consolidation of the 48 PSAPs. Again, I think this one measure could do that. Our standpoint is that we don't believe that that's necessary, that we have that authority in the Office of Emergency Management to direct those consolidations. We would rather take the approach that there's incentivizing ways to get people to do that. And let the locals work that out as opposed to the state coming down and directing it. That's our stand on it at this point. Again, it's going to be another discussion item, and I think they'll get lots of input from the different groups, and I know we have. But right now, we're just pushing that one piece and let whatever we want to take on or take off. And I know the good Senator Olson has some ideas, too. So maybe we can dovetail those two together in whatever bills that we do come up with. But that's the one we submitted for you. That concludes my quick update, Mr. Chairman, at your direction to make it snappy, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Oh, by the way, I think we handed this out. You have what we call our J9 calendar, which this is our reintegration program, and that's the schedule of events that are going to be occurring throughout the state here in the next few months, and you can see we're very, very busy. There's several pages here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages of activities that are going to be going on in the next few months. So we're very busy with our crews. That concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have, Mr. Chairman.
Question, Shelley? I have one question, just half comment, half question, to see what you compare notes. I was in a briefing less than 10 days ago with Representative Adam Smith, who I think, as you know, is the ranking minority member at Armed Services in the House.
Washington.
And sequestered January 2nd, daylight. They're anticipating 12% cut in DOD budget as part of sequestration. Is that pretty much what you're hearing?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, actually, we heard 15. So I'm glad to hear 12. That's actually better than what we were hearing. tremendous amount of discussion on that topic. Mm-hmm. We have not seen, we've heard some of the news sources come out. The president says he's going to protect the soldiers, he's going to protect the families, he's going to protect the salaries. Under 12 or 15, whatever the number is, basically the analysis that I've seen shows that all procurement will stop, basically. All the R&D will stop. There won't be anything special going on with respect to anything that they can stop production on, they will. So there's going to be a lot of people out of work.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, and the O&M budget's the one that I looked at, and I'll get you a copy of the slides I had. They were ball jank slides and congressional slides from the committee from a week ago, and it's just reality. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Unless they do something different. So.
They don't seem very capable of getting much done right now, do they?
Well, the analysis is, and I think Roan's analysis back there, who's another one of the big government services firms, is until the morning of the 3rd, they won't get anything done. And yeah. The problem is we're all going to be facing federal cuts in every federal program across the board the morning of the 2nd. So I guess it'll be quite interesting when we come back into session.
Indeed it will, and I think one of our concerns is that we've, over the last decade or so, we've become so reliant on the federal dollars in our budget because we match them with limited state dollars, and it could be very, very devastating.
Other questions?
I have one question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding your family readiness group training, I happen to be at the 9/11 memorial, at our Heroes Memorial in Gresham. And a lady came up to me, I believe she's a veteran. She said she was in charge of about 380 families, and I didn't have time to talk to her about it. Do you know what kind of program she would be referring to at all?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Monos Anderson, we have a network throughout the state of family readiness coordinators. Many of these are volunteers, but also there we have a paid staff of around 20, and they are scattered around the state in different units. If she had 320 families, my hunch is that she would probably be at the brigade headquarters, our 41st Brigade headquarters in Clackamas, and that would be about the right size for that unit, and that many families would be underneath that. And their job is to not only coordinate that, but coordinate the volunteers to keep the information flow, keep them engaged, offer, as you can see on this schedule, there's trainings, there's activities, there's strong bonds is a good example where soldiers identify themselves with having family problems after deployments or even before or during, it doesn't matter. And then we provide this opportunity. It's all 100% paid for by the National Guard Bureau. We bring them into a weekend, and we bring counselors in and work with them on how to, you know, maintain your marriage or how to make it better or how to keep it from falling apart. That's just one that I just looked at here on the – and then we have an ITAP workshop, which means that's employment. Families would be involved in that. And there's just a laundry list of things that we do that we – have with, and these people make sure that happens and get this information out to the family so they can attend these events and help them with their whatever needs they may have. So it's pretty encompassing. It's pretty daunting when you got 20 so folks out there to deal with that, but it's better than it was. It used to be all volunteer. We used to have one paid staff for the entire state. So it's we're pretty proud of it. It's hard work, but it's good work.
If you just stay put there temporarily, General, we'll do the last item on the agenda, or second to last item, 911 update.
I have a question for the General.
Okay.
You have submitted an LC for the consolidation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, no. We put it in this slide. We had one submitted. We pulled it. We decided that it could be wrapped into this one bill if we choose to do that.
Okay.
And again, I think it's a question of the legislature. Our position's not changed. We've had the same position that needs to be from the bottom up. But we continue to get budget notes from the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Ways and Means that tells us we need to come up with a consolidation plan. We don't have the legal authority to do that. So my question back to the legislature is, if you want us to have that legal authority, fine. We don't think we need it, nor do we want it. But if that's what the legislature wants to do, then we'll do it.
But just to be candid, nobody wants the tar baby, but someone's going to get it. So. other 911 issues?
Been there, done that.
Done there. I know. You understand the military term ambush now,
that's
right?
That's right, absolutely.
Senator Olson, any other updates on 911? I know you've been meeting from our last session on the bill that didn't go anyplace with these folks.
Two bills.
Two bills,
and one I've already submitted for an LC, which is the prevention of sweeps of the 911 money, and the other one was a gargantuan undertaking on the next generation technologies. We had some meetings after we pulled the bill, and fortunately when the bill was pulled, we got to resubmit it as sending money directly to the 911 centers, which was good, and so that worked well. But the bill has been redrafted. We've had meetings. I've done research of all 49 other states and how they do the process. And we've come together and we sat down line by line and went over the exact verbiage as how we wanted this bill to read. It's now corrected and ready to be sent out to have people take a look at before I submit it. I might just go ahead and submit it and we can always amend it, but it's ready to go with everything that everybody wanted. So it is quintessentially perfect. Bill.
Sometimes I wonder about those things.
Absolutely.
And colleagues, and as you know, for Monday's the deadline for committee bills, and of course, no one's, any bill we submit to be drafted will come back as a legislative council draft to us, and of course, no one's obligated to vote for any bill that comes back. If there are bills that you have that are still veterans-related that you think ought to be committee bills, I mean, this is the, I guess you could say, the nonpartisan committee in the legislature, and we hear all bills that come across. So I remind you once again, and I remind your staffs once again, that if you do have veterans' bills you want the committee to submit as legislative concepts to get them drafted, we will do so. It doesn't take a vote of the committee to do it, and then when they come back, then we'll discuss those issues, I think, in September or in December when we actually have the LC drafts before us. And again, even in December, no one's obligated to vote for anything. It's just establishing the agenda that goes forward. I would also encourage, I see Tom Mann back there, as I've had discussions with the military department and OEM, that, you know, if you have concepts that, you know, we're basically in agreement in, let's not create a huge bureaucracy to make something happen. Let's just get me the concepts. Let's go forward. Let's be efficient. Let's be good government. We're going to have enough contentious issues after sequestration happens, but the federal government in January to deal with, and those that are in the veterans and the military family, we can deal with in a nonpartisan way. We need to do so. So I encourage the Veterans Department to come forth with that too. Any other final questions for General Caldwell? And we welcome your new director on board. Next time he can come up and face the wolves.
Yes, sir.
And that you can go back and find the floating bridges and docks.
That's what I'm up to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other issues for the committee at this time? Senator Courtney?
Nope.
Madam Vice Chair? Senator Olson? If not, then I think we all have other work and people's business to do. The Senate Interim Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs is adjourned.
Good job.